Hey, what's up? It's Rick. I've been running around running my band. And it just consumes every minute, because the thing is that you can't, it's not like a 9-to-5 job where, Friday rolls around, it's 5 o'clock, you punch out, and you're free, until Monday, 9 a.m. It's not like that, because if you just drop the ball, or if you just make the opportunities wait for you, the opportunities go somewhere else. You just feel like your work is never done. There's always an update on the website you have to do. There's always a phone call you have to make. You always have to practice, So you don't get a vacation. Work isn't limited to some, block of time every Monday through Friday. So I spend, every minute of every day thinking about my music and my band and, where we're going to play next and what we're going to record next and what picture we're going to put on a t-shirt, whatever, it doesn't end, really. And, I was thinking back to the time when this was the period after when I left the circus, the first time I left the circus. I think wasn't even 21 yet. I think I was like 20 years old. I'd done a stint on the Big Show as a clown, and somehow decided that what I needed to do was get out of there and do music, So I just packed up my excuses and my clothes and a couple things I owned, a couple bucks I saved up, and at the end of my contract, I threw everything in a borrowed car and I drove to Boston. And this house was forming there, so I wound up in this house, which eventually became known as the Rascal House. And all the occupants were also former circus clowns. It was a sort of a halfway house. I mean, they were kind of like trying to reform their lives to being normal citizens. Find something to do for money, start the next phase of their career in entertainment, and learn to dance normally. That was the joke, anyways. There was a guy in there named John Keogh. He was the guy who brought in the house suit. He owned it, but we all used it for job interviews and the like. There was a guy named Sean Willis, who came in with nothing. As this sort of like notoriety of Rascal House spread that, there's a bunch of clowns all living together, or former clowns living together in this house. This guy, Alan Black, also a former clown from the Big Show, came in. He came in from DC on the Amtrak train, hung out with us for the weekend. Everybody just partied, went to bars and stuff, and had a blast reminiscing. And on Sunday night, we went with him back to the Amtrak station to see him off. And he couldn't, he searched through all his pockets in his suitcase, but could not find his ticket back to Washington, D.C. We wasted quite a bit of time. In fact, we were still looking for it when that train pulled out. And he wound up living in Rascal House for another 2 years. Before I left the Big Show, another one of the clowns who was staying on, she told me about this job she had working in the human services for the special needs population. She kind of worked as a relief worker, filling in residential situations where people needed care or supervision, people who had special needs. She came from a background in creative therapy, and this made sense. But she knew the guy really well who owned the company she worked for, and she, was, I guess, still felt connected to it and felt nostalgic about it, and for some reason suggested that I would be, as like a day job after I got out of the circus, this would be good for me, which I'm sure, in some ways sounded as ridiculous to me as it does to you. But I think the thing that made me go in for this job interview was that my friend had described it. She said, "Yeah, most of the time what I did was I worked on these overnight shifts, and an overnight shift was either an awake overnight or an asleep overnight." But invariably, what it was that she would just go to one of these residence situations, at night when the person was sleeping, you know, there were persons who were sleeping, and she would just hang out on the couch all night in case something happened. In case, like, somebody needed to make a phone call or care for someone or assist someone. And nothing ever happened. The asleep overnights were like, you were allowed to go to sleep. And you did. The awake overnights were, you were not allowed to go to sleep. And you did go to sleep anyways. And you never did anything. That's how she described it. I mean, you know, I don't think that's true. But it certainly was enough for me to, like, go in and have an interview with this guy. He was a really nice guy. I think his name was Tom. Running a really good business, doing a good thing for good people. And I just, I went and interviewed him. I said, hey, man, I want a job where I go somewhere and just, like, sleep on the couch all night and get paid for it. And he hired me. I really had no interest in that job, or any job, but I gave that a shot because I felt that it would allow me to prioritize my music. You know, that I could just, I was working on a on-call basis, I could turn down any jobs I wanted in case I got a gig. There wasn't a 9-to-5 going where I was expected to be at a certain place the same time every day, 5 days a week. And so that seemed appealing to me just based on that alone. And it was not easy. I mean, I saw a lot of shit there that I'm sorry I saw. People with special needs getting abused by the people who were supposed to be caring for them. And mismanaged residential facilities and things like this. And just the basic stress that I was getting from being in a job that I really had no business being in. And sometimes there was, like, travel involved to get to these assignments, so I just would go, you know, a long trek by bus, train, or car, and then get home kind of late in the day and be exhausted from whatever it was I had to be doing. You're constantly getting trained for something new, you know. The fantasy of going somewhere and just doing the overnight, sleeping on the couch and getting paid for it wasn't always a reality. And the fact is that it screwed up my sleep schedule so much that basically I didn't do anything except for, like, go to work and sleep. And then on the weekends, I'd just throw myself into, you know, beginning Friday afternoon straight through to late Sunday night. I'd be, like, throwing myself into my band and my music. And I didn't even really have friendships. I didn't do anything for fun. I didn't just hang out. I didn't have downtime. I didn't just take a walk, you know. It was no way to live. I don't know what I was thinking. But, you know, I was 20 years old, and I really thought if I was going to make it, I was going to have to throw myself into everything and prove it. You know, I was worried. I was worried it was going to wind up being ordinary. So I think I was doing everything I could to avoid this situation. Avoid my life. Rascal House disbanded. I mean, I just think it couldn't keep going. We were, you know, we were living in squalor. I think we'd stop paying the bills at some point. I think we'd stop paying the rent at some point. There was no heat. We were all sleeping in the same room with a space heater going. We almost burned the place down. One time, we were all sitting around the oven, keeping warm, like we had blankets on, and we were sitting around the oven. I think we were cooking hot dogs on the burner, actually, and I think we were playing cards right on the open oven door. And this, a guy, you know, they used to have these door-to-door, you know, collect-for-charity dudes at the time, you know, like for Greenpeace or whatever. This guy for Greenpeace came to the door and was asking for donations, and he took one look at our situation. He felt bad. He never even asked us for money. Somebody made a movie about us at that time. It was called Rascal House. You could probably find it somewhere. Community access television. Somebody made a documentary. Rascal House or House of Clowns or something. I don't know. I'm sure it was funny. I never saw it. They came in and interviewed us. There was a bag of flour that somebody had thrown across the kitchen. Like, they had covered there was flour everywhere. We used to play out the window. It was a game, like when the food got old in the fridge and stale, we just like throw the window up and then chuck the food out the window. We kept anything important in the freezer. If there was like an electricity bill that we had to pay, we'd throw it in the freezer. If we had a spare key for the front door, throw it in the freezer. It was the only safe place in that house. Every piece of furniture in there was picked out of the trash. The place was rarely cleaned. That was rough living. I probably should have just taken a job that would give me an honest day's work and a steady income and got myself into a comfortable living situation and built my band from there, but I don't know. I think I kind of thought, like, if I went the normal route, then it would never work. I had this sense that, like, it had to be fucked up. That was the only way it could work. And it was exhausting. I don't know how I survived those years. I really don't. I'm sure that right now I could not. I could not last in it for a day. But what did I know? And so, like a week ago, I just woke up sweating and shaking. I don't know why all this came back to me. It's been so long. I really don't know. And I don't know what kind of a realization hit me while I was sleeping. But I don't think I was there. I think those guys were my friends. I think that they cared about me and that they were living life and that I was running off to rehearsal or like working some overnight shift somewhere and then sleeping on, you know, in front of the television all day, but that they were living life and that I don't know, I was disconnected. I was fighting for something. I was wasting every minute of every day of my life doing something that I loved. And I think I've got to like stop. And just, like, go out and feed the squirrels or, you know, do nothing. Just look around at the people around me sometimes, I think, now. Well, what happened at the Rascal House is that one night at the bar, they sent Sean Willis to the bar to get another round of drinks, and he never returned. And they went over there to see what happened, and he was making out with this Irish girl, who he fell madly in love with that summer. And then when she left and went back to Ireland, his heart broke into a million pieces. So he went to Ireland. And then John Keogh followed a few weeks later to go have a visit, and he never returned. And they both fell in love with girls and started families. John Keogh's radio career took off there. Everything went well. Alan Black and I were left in Boston, but Alan had been accepted to the Goodman Theater School in Chicago, and off he went. I don't know. Those years came and went, and those people came and went, and somehow I missed the whole thing. You've been listening to the Frickin' Circus podcast. www.frickincircus.com. My name is Frick. My email address is frick@frickincircus.com. Just Google Frickin' Circus. Right? Peace out, sauerkraut.